Nation, welcome back. We are back and better than ever. We are excited to be coming to you, excited to be talking about a huge week. Today is Friday, May 6th, and so you're kind of right in that sweet spot of we had a big Wednesday night slate, and we are heading into a huge weekend of conference play, and man, I'm excited to talk to you guys about all of it. Caleb, how are we feeling? Talk to the people.
Oh man, I'm super excited for this weekend, Dan. We had an awesome Thursday night and or Wednesday night, and we're gonna have an awesome Thursday night here. And coming into the weekend, I'm excited for it. Can't wait to get into it with you.
All right, well, let's do just that. You ready to dive on in?
Let's do it. The boys are back in town. I said, the boys are back in town.
So with that said, let's go ahead and we'll dive in, and let's just go ahead and start right away with the Liberty League. Had an action-packed night there Wednesday night. Two games, semifinal matchups that set the table for championship weekend, and we will have a rematch of RIT and St. Lawrence. Caleb, how do you feel about this one?
I'm pretty excited about this one, Dan. It's going to be a good matchup between those two teams. And how they got there was pretty exciting. We can get into it here, but that Union St. Lawrence game was just not what I was expecting. You know, if you follow the big dog on Twitter, I had a Union coming in as favorites there, even though I thought it was going to be a close battle. I did call that, but ended up not being too close at the end there with St. Lawrence coming out on top by 6 goals there, 15-9. What did you see in this, Dan, before I get into it here?
Yeah, let's set the table a little bit. So that championship will be, this Saturday, and will be an awesome, awesome matchup. Obviously, the winner of that one will get an AQ. I think it's pretty clear that at least the second place team, potentially the third, and I wouldn't be surprised if all 4 of these teams that were involved in the semifinal matchup for the Liberty League end up making it into the tournament. So lots yep. of chances for these teams probably to still keep playing. But let's go ahead and just kind of focus in on last night. Like we said, St. Lawrence 15, Union 9. And this was on the road, too. So St. Lawrence heads to Union and kind of takes it to them. Goalie William Helm returns to the cage for him. And that defense was really stout, held a strong Union offense to under 10 goals, which in the shot clock era, you're in good shape when you can do that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they held them there, like you said, to 9 goals. I still was impressed with how they distributed it. As far as their points, they got a lot of people involved. The key players, Peter Burns, he got his a little bit there, 1 goal, 1 assist, but would like to see him do more in a big game like that. But one call out I did want to have with St. Lawrence was even though I was very impressed with their offense last night or yesterday that for that matter, all of their 22 points came from just 6 players. And if you want to break it down even more, 17 of those 22 points came from 3 players alone. So that's Chris Jordan, Ben Murtaugh, and Jack Hennessy. So that's might just be something there where you got to shut off St. Lawrence guys and just make them use everybody to score on you. And if you do that, that might be a situation where they start to struggle. So we'll kind of see how they play it moving forward.
And the other thing I would say about this one here is, it shouldn't come too much of a surprise for St. Lawrence to be holding Union to low goal totals in this one. That defense is really good, and looking right now at the the adjusted efficiency numbers, the St. Lawrence defense checks in at 3rd. And so right now it's CNU, Hamilton, St. Lawrence, York, RIT in terms of adjusted efficiency defensively. So, not totally surprised there that they were able to keep those numbers low and keep those goal totals low. Really, really want to make sure we give out 2 shout outs here. One of the criminally underrated, covered players this year, I think, has been Guthrie Little, who's a short stick D-mitty for St. Lawrence. And we talk about them a lot. I like every time we talk about a team's defense, basically on this podcast, we're going to mention short stick D-middies. When you talk about offense in lacrosse, like, especially in Division III lacrosse, like, every team essentially goes into it with a game plan of we're going to attack short sticks. Like, there's very few teams in the country that go into it, like, allowing their number one to just attack poles. And so, like, when you start looking at defenses and you're, like, that's basically where you have to start is how's their short stick D-middie play? And Guthrie Little gives St. Lawrence a really, really strong short stick D-middie in that spot. And Union has one as well with Jake Titus, and they use some offensive guys and some two-way guys that give them looks there as well. But, you know, the Liberty League between those guys and then Penn Eystrad at RIT, and then RPI has some guys as well. Like the short stick D midi spot in that league is pretty deep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head there.
All right. A little bit more on the RIT RPI game.
Yeah. Why don't we touch on that?
I mean, the biggest thing in this game was the third quarter. Like third quarter just sets off like a huge RIT run in the second half. They really dominated the second half and it was tight for the beginning, you know, like RPI does a really good job of coming in and, you know, making sure that their scout is on point. And so it makes sense that it took a little bit for RIT to kind of feel them out and figure out what their best looks were going to be. And then maybe even talk about them at halftime and then come out. And, you know, from that point, they were able to execute and get it done.
Yeah, definitely. I had the same thought. You know, it was kind of close in the first and second quarter there, and RIT really just came alive in the third and ran away with it. But yeah, you know, I think RPI scouted them well. I mean, they won earlier in the season, so RIT they knew they were coming. You know, there was no sneaking up on RIT at this point for RPI. So they went ahead and handled business, and they handled it the way I think a top team should. So props to them, and good luck to them in the championship there.
Yeah, and so this will be RIT's shot at 10 straight. So if they get this one done, it'll be their 10th in a row. You know, that's obviously a crazy, crazy milestone, that, especially in a league like the Liberty where, you know, it's not like, I don't mean to take any shots here, but it's not the Atlantic East, right? Like Cabrini's won that a million years in a row. I don't even know what it's up to, but you know, the competitive levels are very different. So for RIT to be on 10th straight is, you know, really commendable. All right. So with that one in the books, go ahead and we'll switch. We'll head down to Centennial Conference. Let's start with the one where you predicted an upset and I told you you were crazy, but neither one of us was right. So you had it as was going to be low scoring, first to seven wins. I had it as Gettysburg was going to win by seven. Turns out both wrong. Gettysburg 12, Muhlenberg 11, and it takes a goal with 10 seconds left to give them that edge. I know you got to catch a good bit of this one, so why don't you take it for a little bit and give us a rundown on some of your thoughts.
Yeah. So this was an exciting one. I mean, it really went back and forth. And when Gettysburg kind of went up a little bit, I think they had like a 2-goal advantage in the late in the first or early in the second. I thought like, oh man, this might be it. This might be an insurmountable lead here. But I was impressed by the Mules. They fought back hard and they proved that they weren't just a team that could play in a low score game, that they could actually score some points against a pretty good goalie. And come out and play strong. So they came out and did that and made it a tight game. And boy, was it fun to watch. I mean, it was back and forth. I was really impressed by some of the players and the plays that they had out there. But yeah, at the end of the day, Gettysburg just had that last 10-second goal. And it kind of felt like it towards the end, you know, that the last team that had the ball, that had a good offensive possession, was going to win the game. And sure enough, it came out that Gettysburg had it last and was able to put it away. So props to them. But, you know, other than that, it was a pretty even game. I mean, shots on goal and shots in total is about the same. Saves were all about the same. So it really just came down to who wanted it more there at the end. And Gettysburg came out on top. So it should make for an interesting championship here for the Centennial.
Yeah, absolutely. And so really, I think one of the big stories of this is the Gettysburg attack unit. That group really like hard to say, put your finger on it exactly, but perhaps I guess the way that we could word it is that they're starting to mesh really well now. For a while in the beginning of the season, they were playing different guys there, mixing things up. And this group of Raymond, Mather, and Knife down there have been running together now probably longer, you know, at this point than any other group that they've played consistently together this season have ran together. And so I think we're starting to see a little bit of chemistry start to develop there. And, you know, that could be one of the reasons why they end up getting to 12 in this game instead of 5 against them like they did in the first round. And then really important to note here as well, the Raymond finishing ability just around the net. He's really shown in the last, you know, little bit that when he can get tight into the goal, he can definitely make you pay. And so maybe he's a guy that as you're scouting, you kind of peg as somebody that you're not necessarily super worried about sliding to, especially at the expense of giving him feeding lanes. But there comes a point where, you know, like if he's beaten inside to tight locations like that, you know, you got to make sure you're ready to go. And, you know, goals that are in tight like that, like anybody's going to score if they are left on an island. You don't even really necessarily have to beat somebody too badly or too cleanly. If you're in that type of space, you can just kind of shoot it off someone's hip or find a good spot on the net and, you know, live with that. And so I think that offense is starting to develop a little bit and kind of bring in some chemistry that's important.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing if they can bounce back from a kind of a tough season there and see if they can make any noise here at the end of the year.
Yeah, and then the other big thing to mention here is this game is totally different if James Dalamonte is hurt or in a Gettysburg jersey or, you know, like if he is not there. 9 points on the day and 7 goals for Muhlenberg. You know, like that is really, really impressive. And it really looked like McMillan just couldn't read the ball out of his stick. Like, it was really weird. There were some shots that he pulled from deep or, like, on the run or contested that, like, out of his stick as it's released, I'm not necessarily thinking, like, oh, that's definitely going. And then whether the ball just, like, got on McMillan quicker than he realized or, like, he just couldn't see it out of the stick. He did, to his, like, credit, gets his hands really deep. And he's got pretty good hands, too. Pretty good shot with both hands where the stick is nice and covered. You know, really deep. But man, it was really interesting. It was like every time he had an opportunity and the ball came out of his stick, it was on the goal. It was in the goal.
Yeah. I was really impressed by him. And I think he's one of the reasons, you know, we've been talking about Muhlenberg so much over the past couple of weeks here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the other side in the Centennial Conference, you had another 1-goal game. And a situation where we were kind of eyeing down an upset here with a few minutes left in the fourth quarter, and your sign is up 12-10, to which Dickinson, you know, they're back against the wall. They've seen plenty of adversity, obviously living through it, and still are undefeated on the season. And so with their backs against the wall and that on the line and a trip to the conference championship on the line, had what it takes to battle back, rattled off 3 straight, and, you know, end up advancing. Did you get to catch much of this one?
Yeah, so I didn't see too much of this one, but was looking through some of the recaps there. And, yeah, I thought the same. I mean, Ursinus has been a tough out, and we've seen them play well over the past few weeks. So I knew this wasn't going to be, you know, a sort of a layup, but definitely didn't expect it to be this close. I mean, Dickinson has been playing very well over the past couple of weeks and this whole season, really. So I was kind of expecting Dickinson to run away with this towards the end of the game, but the fact it was so close and kind of came down to the end there was pretty awesome to see, and just kind of props to Ursinus for playing hard there against a good team.
Yeah, and perhaps we dove into this too quickly, jumping right into the games, but important to note, so Centennial is a 4-team conference with 5 very good teams, so every year one of them is going to be left out. This year, it happens to be Franklin and Marshall, who was the 2021 winners and have been nationally ranked for most of the season. You know, so that was a really interesting kind of quirk of the season. And the way that played out is you had a tie between Ursinus, Muhlenberg, and F&M, who all sat at 5-3 in the conference. The first tiebreaker is differential. Muhlenberg won that, so they took the 3 seed, which leaves your Sinus and F&M. And then the second part of it becomes head-to-head. So because your Sinus took that head-to-head, they then took the 4th seed, and F&M ended up, unfortunately, missing their conference tournament. Crazy result.
Yeah.
Something that I would have predicted at the beginning of the year. I perhaps could have seen Muhlenberg entering, but I would have picked them in over either Gettysburg or your side, probably not in over Franklin and Marshall, which is, you know, just crazy that's the place that we're in this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been following the big dog rankings, you know I'm not, I haven't been too high on F&M this year, but if I would be lying to you if I said I thought Muhlenberg would be in over some of those teams. So
yeah, we're talking preseason. So, we're talking end of 2021, early 2022. Probably not a expectation you would have seen coming. But yeah,
I'd like to think I know some lacrosse, but
go ahead.
Yeah. I think I know some lacrosse, but not that much. I wouldn't have picked them in the preseason, to be honest with you. So
crystal ball didn't exactly give us that hint coming forward.
Nope.
But man, so that one will be this Centennial Championship this weekend is going to be a really good one. It was not that close of a game in round one, with Dickinson winning, I think taking it by like 6 or so. But hopefully we get a closer game in this one, something that's just more, you know, entertaining and gives the people all the Centennial Conference Championship vibes that they want.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to see. I can't wait for it. If you had to ask me now, I think Dickinson pulls it out again, but I think it is going to be a little bit closer. I'd expect maybe like a 10-9 sort of win for Dickinson.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. You know, I think first place that I go to when I start thinking about matchups is, you know, face-off and goalie play, which teams have the advantage there. I think Dickinson has a bit of an advantage in both spots right now. And then offensively, that Dickinson group, like, I feel like a broken record for saying that I feel like a broken record when it comes to Dickinson, but I really feel like they have that identity to them that, you know, they've, and quite frankly, it's working out for them, you know, like they're sitting here at 17-0 heading into their conference championship, like, what they're working with on offense, that identity is working. You know, it's tough to stop. They have lots of different options that they can make you pick your poison with. I think going into that team game, like, you have to double pull the midfield. I don't know which attackman you go in short stick. I think it kind of depends on your matchups and who you feel like you your specific short stick D mids will match up best against between one of the two freshmen. I don't think you can go and short stick Skylar Schluter. That seems like a recipe for disaster. And Owen Porter is a really, really, really good dodger. So in quick first step. So like, I don't think that he's the answer. But then Matt Thurston, you know, is kind of like we were saying, he's a guy that may not beat you, but he's going to get to dangerous spots and shoot it off your hip. So, you know, it's not like we said, it's not a super clean situation. But I think you have to go in with a double pull. So it'll be really interesting to see what Gettysburg does this time, see what they can do to mix up their game plan and kind of try and throw Dickinson off. And then I wouldn't be too surprised here either that this was a close game with Dickinson and Yersinus. Yersinus comes into this game as the highest ranked in terms of strength of schedule team in the country. So for them to come in and give a team a run for their money should be no surprise. You know, they are extremely battle-tested. And quite frankly, they've been put through the ringer this year. They have to feel like coming up short in that moment. Like, I feel like that's basically the entire season that's been working up to that moment. You need the HQ to get in because you've played so many good teams and have just too many losses. And it feels pretty heartbreaking for them. But you got to think that this season and playing these games will pay dividends for them down the line.
Yeah, I hope so for them. You know, they seemed like to be kind of a young team that's growing. So hopefully they can take this into next season and kind of build from this moving forward.
And I'm going to add a little sprinkle on top that makes it a little bit worse, which is the that you kind of had them, you know, like you feel like you had them when you have a 2-goal lead in the fourth quarter there. And then the goal that ends up being the goal to take the lead is extra man. And the penalty that happened for it was a locked in penalty. So now after you went down, you don't have that extra, that even up guy to be able to go and double team. So like, quite frankly, that penalty and then giving up the goal essentially ended the game right there. Because once they scored, then your sign has had no ability to go and like stretch and double team to try and even get the ball back. So, you know, got to feel like a little bit of a heartbreaking loss there for your sinus, but the only way to go from here is if you're them is to just use it and take it as a lesson. And if you're a young guy on that team, you just, you know, go to work this offseason and you come back ready to roll in the fall with a little bit wiser. All right. So I think that'll kind of do it for the Centennial. Any other closing thoughts here before we move on to the landmark?
No, feeling pretty good about that. Looking forward to this weekend and seeing who comes out on top.
All right. So like we said, let's go ahead. We'll switch gears here. We're going to stay down in the South, though. Landmark. And I say South, like PA, like basically if you're not the Empire 8, NESCAC, the Liberty League, or one of the like Massachusetts leagues, like you're South. Let's start with that game, the Elizabethtown Scranton game. One that, you know, obviously has to break your heart a little bit as our guy Coach Hoffmeister goes down. But obviously, you know how, you know him, you know his teams. They're going to fight, and they did, fought to the very end, went on a big run in the middle that kind of really put you know, Elizabethtown on their heels. And the difference between this game and the first time they played them, quite drastic. You know, and essentially just comes down to which team's going to make a few more plays down the stretch. And for Elizabethtown, that happens. They score a couple once it gets to 16-16 late. And like we said, Scranton goes on that run. So Elizabethtown is forced to have to battle back for a good part of the game and end up getting it done. And now move on to see Catholic in the championship.
Yep. Yeah. I think you got it there pretty good. I mean, I think Elizabethtown had probably more of the talent, but Scranton was just there to play, and they had the heart, and you could see that the whole game. So props to them for coming out and just making it a great game to watch and to see there. And Elizabethtown, they had to battle back. So I'd say they're pretty battle tested going into this game against Catholic.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. Before we totally move on from this game, it's important to note just how statistically even this game was. Like, they had both teams had the exact same number of shots. Both teams were like right on par in terms of clears, turnovers, literally just about every statistical category. The one that made the difference to me, or the only really one that had a large edge, was facing off. And so Danny Gilbert won 23 of 38 attempts. You know, working to get those guys those extra possessions, especially down the stretch, is really important. And in a high scoring game like that, when you know that your faceoff guy can get you the ball back and get you another opportunity to get a possession in, you know, that's really, really important. And so that was kind of the spot that I felt like, you know, just gave them a little bit of an edge and tilted the game in their favor.
Yeah, it's these specialist positions that we've been talking about all year. They can really make or break your team coming down to it.
Yeah, and so now Elizabethtown will head to Catholic for a championship game. Catholic did play in their semis, but it was, you know, a much different contest, different types of vibes in the Elizabethtown-Scranton game and the Catholic-Drew game. But you brought up the point, and so now I'm going to make you put your coach's hat on. Would you rather be heading into your conference championship game having just won a tight semifinal game, you know, where obviously your guys are playing and they're, you know, like working hard for 60 minutes? Or would you rather go into the championship game off of, you know, a blowout 10-goal win where maybe you get to rest some guys in the second half, or your starters aren't just getting as banged up the entire game or whatever, you know, like, you get two opposite ends of the spectrum here with how teams are entering the Landmark Championships between Etown and Catholic. Which would you rather have?
Yeah, that's tough. I think it all depends on how your team is that year and what kind of guys you have on your team. You know, if you're a younger team, I think you probably want to be in that battle-tested game so you're nice and ready for the opponent. But if you're a little bit of an older team that has that experience, that kind of knows how to turn on that switch, I think it's fine that you have a 10-point blowout win and can kind of get some rest and some different guys playing, because you know, with that experience, you can turn it on when needed. So I think it's all about your team needs and kind of the players and personnel that you have there.
Yeah, I think that probably is a pretty good answer. A little bit of a cop-out because you didn't really pick a side. And I
just a little bit.
You would rather have, not which side you would rather justify. So why don't you actually answer the question that I'm asking you, Big Dog?
Fair, fine. All right. If I had to choose, I'd be playing in the tight game. I'm the type of person I like to be, you know, going all the time when we're you know, in these sort of situations. So you know, to be in a tight game where I have to you know, make sure everybody's running on point and everything like that, is it's going to keep us sharp for the upcoming game. So that's my answer if you want me to pick.
I'm sorry for that attitude. But it seemed necessary.
Someone needs to call me on my stuff every now and again.
You're right. You're darn right. Someone has to. All right, you ready to move on from this one?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go ahead and head north. We've been down south for a couple in a row. We'll go up and we'll touch on the NUMAC. NUMAC Championship is going to be really interesting. We have Springfield as the 3 seed, who's going to be heading to MIT, who enters as the 1 seed. And it seems kind of crazy, but not only is this MIT's first appearance in their conference championship, but they're hosting it. They won the 1 seed in it. So, you know, really interesting there. Will be a great game. Personally, I see MIT continuing the undefeated streak. But perhaps Coach Bugby and the Springfield crew come in with an awesome game plan and hand them their first loss of the season.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Springfield team that's given some good teams a good run for their money. And you know, they beat Amherst early on in the season. So they're not a team to be taken lightly. But I think MIT, I think you're right. You know, MIT, I think they continue the win streak here. They've definitely been a pretty dominant team, especially in this division. And Babson did give them a good run. You know, it was a 12-10 game, but it is only that close because you have Mac Mort standing out and making 21 saves. So, I mean, without that, I think it's a pretty runaway game there. So this will be a fun one to watch. I'm definitely going to be keeping my eyes on it. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to see MIT come away with this one.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, actually, I shouldn't say for sure. I could see Springfield and the Coach Bugby Nation coming in there and, you know, having a good game plan, letting Zach, I am going to mispronounce this last name, but Zach, I'm going to say it as Sweet. We're just going to call him Sweet, Zach Sweet. It's definitely wrong, but he is Sweet, so we're calling him Sweet. He's got 88 points on the season, so, you know, like, nothing to scoff at. And then he added 6 more to that. He has 88 points, including the 6 points that he had last night against Coast Guard. So 6 points in that game, and Springfield only gets to 10. So maybe we're looking at a situation where if MIT can kind of take him out of the equation offensively, they're going to be in good shape. But like we said, Coach Bugby's going to come in with a plan to make sure that he's got his hands free and is shaking all game. And then defensively, they have a guy that, you know, really made some noise kind of around the mid-year mark, when we were doing mid-year All-Americans and made a push. And so perhaps he's the answer there for Garden Gebhardt, who actually took over as the all-time career goals record holder in all of Division III lacrosse last night with that performance. So, you know, really impressive. And like we said last time we talked about this, like, we know there's going to be some boo birds or some like Debbie Downers that come in and say like, oh, well, he had 5 years or he had two teams, or he had like whatever, who cares? Like, but like you didn't score 200 and whatever it is goals, so like of course you're gonna say it. And if you are one of the people that sang it, then you would know. If you are somebody that scored that many goals, like you wouldn't be lessening somebody else's accomplishments for scoring that many, unless you're just like world's most insecure person. Which, like, if you are that insecure and you've scored that many goals, like, go watch some highlight tapes. Like, take it. Like, it's okay. We won't be mad at you. Go back, watch your own highlight tapes, and rid yourself of the insecurity, and just be happy for somebody that scored that many goals, because it's really impressive.
Go off, Dan. Go off.
Was that a rant?
Oh, no, it was good. It was needed.
Good. All right. Because that's how I feel. And you know what? Sometimes, and I think if you, you know, follow us and you follow on Twitter and you have been listening to the podcast, you know it. But like sometimes we get passionate on here because you know what? We're passionate about D3 Lacs.
Passionate people.
Mm. All right. I don't know how much more I have to say about the new Mac other than Springfield MIT is going to be awesome. Ryan Gephardt is awesome. Connor Roberts for Springfield, the defender, is awesome. Like, it's going to be a really good game. I'm excited for it.
I can't wait. Yep.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and switch up here, and let's go. We haven't touched on anything in the Midwest, so we need to go touch on some of those. And the one that I want to focus on is the NCAC, specifically because they had games last night, but also because this is one that we're really going to have to pay attention to in terms of Pool C bids, and exactly how this one plays out is absolutely going to impact the field for the tournament and could have drastic impacts. You have any thoughts here on this one with Kenyon last night taking it to Ohio Wesleyan, or with Denison kind of handling business over Oberlin?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'd be lying to you if I'd say these are two teams that I've watched a lot of film on, because that just isn't true. But, Denison, this is a team we've seen before in the Mustang Classic. We know they can handle business against some good teams. I would generally lean towards them a little bit just because I've seen them more. But, I mean, Kenyon handling business against a good OWU team and taking it to them is very impressive. So I think this is going to be a pretty good game to watch.
Yeah. So the first round was a two-goal game, a two-goal Denison win. I don't know how much either team changed in his time since that game. My guess is not too much, but a two-goal game, you know, that's one that's hinging on a few results here and there, a few 50-50 ground balls, maybe a face-off. When they're, you know, result that kind of turns into a goal that could have switched and gone the other way, you know, these things happen. And in two goal games, like if it falls the other way, perhaps we're looking at a different result. And the reason that this one is important is because if Kenyon does land this upset, Denison is still going into the tournament. If Denison wins this game, Kenyon is not going into the tournament, which means that one of those teams slotted as a Pool C, you know, it has got to be feeling pretty good about themselves. If Kenyon wins this game, which is possible, right? Like Kenyon has a lot of good things going for him. And right now they're playing with confidence, as you just saw with the result from that Ohio Wesleyan game the other night. And they don't just win that game. Like they jump on them. It's 7-1 at halftime. It's 5-0 by the end of the first quarter. Like, it's a dominant performance. Like, well, we was never even really in the game. And so, like, maybe this is a situation where Kenyon is hitting their stride at the right moment, go in, win the NCAC, and then push Denison into a Pool C slot. And now one of those teams that's currently slotted there is really, really, like, sweating it out.
Definitely. Yep. It's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out for all these teams here.
All right, so I think that kind of wraps us up for last night's recap. There were obviously a lot of other results that happened. We just can't quite hit all of them. Another one that I'm looking forward to this weekend. Actually, you know what? Let's just go ahead. We'll switch right now. We'll go into our weekend preview mode. Are you good with that?
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's get into it.
Perfect. All right. Actually, before we do that, I know we're backtracking a bunch, but Got to give out a quick shout out. You know, it wasn't a game that made the roundup as it was a 20-goal victory, but St. John Fisher's Joe Post officially has taken record holders, has taken the record holding position ever.
Yeah, let's go with that.
All right. So he's the record holder for career ground balls and career faceoff wins after last night. You know, two things that the numbers are just staggering, you know, when you look at him and you see that he's got over 1,100 ground, 1,100 faceoff wins and like over 800 ground balls, approaching 900. And it's like, wow, like those numbers are just staggering when you see him. So really impressive. Had to work in a quick shout out to him after he was able to accomplish that last night. Your Pack boys, your Grove City boys, look like they have a good one coming their way as they'll have St. Vincent come in. And
shout out Wolverines.
And St. Vincent had to battle back in that game too a little bit. They were down, rallied, came back, and you know, we'll now get to go and see Grove City in the championship. So that'll be a good one. And then the OAC semis played out as well, just as we were expecting, with Baldwin Wallace winning the semis and John Carroll winning their semis. So those guys will see each other this weekend as well.
Awesome. Should be some fun ones to watch.
All right. So now we can officially move on from last night. We'll go into weekend preview mode, and we have a couple other conferences that we want to hit that we have not touched on yet in this episode. So let's go ahead and let's go back down south and let's go to the ODAC. We have Friday-Saturday matchups, which is awesome. And if you know the coaches in the ODAC, you know that they want to like put themselves in the most challenging positions possible. And as long as Coach Kudelka has a vote in that, I know that's going to be the case. Playing there, I know he pitches it to the guys as like you want to win, get through Elite Eight weekend. Well, guess what? You got to go win back-to-back games. And it's really important, I think, to get that experience. It's one of the reasons I think lots of teams play in the Mustang Classic as well, is you get that experience with back-to-backs. And it's not just experience for your players going and like understanding how to take care of their bodies overnight or whatever, but it's the scout. I think the biggest thing about playing in games back-to-back early in the year is that it helps you prepare your team for how you're going to implement scout on a one-day basis, or if you're doing it over the course of the week, like, and you're going to sprinkle stuff in for the second game early, like whatever it is, teams do lots of different stuff there. We could probably do a podcast on just preparing for back-to-back games and get a couple coaches on, and I would be the only person that listens to it or thinks it's interesting, but I would absolutely love it. But regardless, so that's how that is down there. And I'm getting excited for it. You know, it's ODAC is always one of the conferences where you can kind of expect something crazy to happen. And you just know that it's going to be an exciting couple of games down there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking through it here, I mean, speaking to your point of crazy things happening, I just looking through it, it looks like we're going to see a WNL versus Lynchburg matchup. But, you know, like you said, crazier things have happened in the ODAC. So, you know, we might not, but if it does get down to that, you know, we had an 11-10 game last time with WNL coming up on top. But to your point with the back-to-back games, I think if it does shake out like that, that probably favors Lynchburg kind of going into it. You know, with the less time, you just have, you know, your talent coming out there, and it's talent versus talent. And I think at that point, Lynchburg's probably got WNL beat a little bit there. So really looking forward to that and seeing how it shakes out. And if it shakes out the way we kind of predict in here, it's going to be a great matchup between Lynchburg and WNL.
Yep. And, you know, I like we said, you can't really sleep on either semifinal. Like this is, Roanoke and Hampton Sydney are teams that are familiar enough as underdogs with the teams that they're going head to head with here, that they're going to be able to come into it with a game plan that throws them off. You know, if they're disciplined about it and they, you know, play with the passion that you need to execute as an underdog. And, you know, we could be looking at a situation where maybe one of those dogs steals a win over WNL or Lynchburg. if I'm was a betting man, or if Vegas was, you know, taking D3 bets, I'd probably have my money on both favorites winning. And then to your point, I'd probably have my money on Lynchburg to write the ship from the regular season loss. That game was, I don't remember if you recall me like texting you about it, but just feeling like it was not Lynchburg's best game, and feeling like they were really missing those midfielders that were a bit banged up, like Rogers and Wolf. I can't exactly recall if they were scratches, like didn't play, or if they were just like battling through stuff, or maybe one of them didn't play and the other one did. But regardless, I remember feeling like injuries were a factor. I remember feeling like Lynchburg just didn't put their best foot forward, which is weird. And, you know, it was a night game at home, so an odd situation there. That said, you know, like WNL's had their number a bit as of late. And so it could be a situation where, you know, WNL just comes in and is prepared for them. And maybe it favors them that they've already have such familiarity with them that they don't need to spend a whole ton of time on them getting scouted. And so playing a Lynchburg on the second day, you know, isn't that drastic for them. Regardless, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out, but excited to see how it does. I think if we see a situation where Lynchburg and WNL see each other in the championship, we're looking at either one of them is in, right? I think regardless of who wins, I think the other one is still in the tournament based on the regional rankings. And we could have Roanoke, right? So Roanoke falls pretty high in their regional rankings as well. And so the ODAC is definitely an interesting conference to keep an eye on right now, as we head down the stretch and these regional rankings play out. I just, if I'm the committee, I really would struggle with taking a highly ranked region 5 team over, you know, a Roanoke or one of those teams that's in the, in regions 1 through 4 that may be a little bit lower ranked. You know, it seems really weird to me. It's just a matter of how much of that human element will be involved, you know?
100%. Yep. But just the prospect of having possibly 3 teams from your conference get in there is going to be huge. So definitely something we want to keep our eye on all these games here this weekend.
Absolutely. Anything else here with the ODAC before we go ahead and move on to the North and go talk about the NESCAC?
No, feeling pretty good. Ready to talk some NESCAC lacks.
All right, so hitting the NESCAC, but before we jump into the games, what do you think of doing a little bit of talk on the all-conference voting? I feel like it'll
set that'd the be awesome. Would love to.
All right. Have you had a chance to look at the results of it yet? There's some interesting stuff.
Oh yeah, I sure have. I've gone through it here, and it's quite the list. So you want to get into it?
My number one question for you.
Hit me.
Are you prepared for the Tufts we are overlooked and underdogs narratives?
Oh, it's going to be fun, Dan. It's going to be
because
fun.
Because if you aren't, you better get ready for them.
I personally am not ready for them, but I'm glad you brought it up so I can get ready for them. Because
prepare yourself. I mean,
what do you have? 1, 2, 3 three all-conference players right here just on the first team?
Yep, so you got 3 first-teamers, which does not include Kyle Adaman, and then just a single second-teamer. And none of the player of the year, rookie of the year, coach of the year, which all go to Bowden. So you know that after they landed that win in the way that they did, they've got to be feeling like something is disconnecting here between Mullane taking player of the year, Will Byrne taking rookie of the year, and Bill Mason taking coach of the year, which I won't fight that one. You know, like I think that one makes a whole ton of sense. Like comes in and, you know, they lost that head-to-head, but it's the only conference game they lost. And this was his first year with them, you know, so, like, a ton of really impressive stuff. They come shooting out of nowhere. The only other team that I think you could have potentially made an argument for would have been Hamilton, because both Hamilton and Bowdoin, had you asked me, like, where they're going to fall within the NESCAC, or even like nationally, especially nationally, I would have been like, oh, I mean, maybe they'll be like middle of the pack in the NESCAC, but like, I don't know that they're going to be making any national noise. And meanwhile, Bowdoin's been ranked in the top 10 for the last like 10 weeks of the season. And Hamilton was like ranked in the top 20 at different times and was always kind of right around that bubble, you know? So from like a reality and like a what actually happened compared to the preseason expectation standpoint, like, I think those are your pretty much make sense and would have been like the two big arguments there. And I kind of see that situation where like maybe the voting happened and, you know, they like props to them for sticking to it and not looking at it and being like, oh, well, Tufts deserves something. But like I could have seen Bradall as player of the year and easily could have seen Merrill, their faceoff guy, as rookie of the year. So, you know, two interesting results there, but definitely sets the table for the weekend with Tufts coming in, and they're going to be throwing this, you know, like underdog overlooked narrative at their team that seems scary if I'm going into playing them. Like, that does not seem like the attitude I want them to have.
No, not at all. That's going to be not a team that I'm going to be want to see right now. And especially right now that they're kind of hitting their stride. They had that 4-point win against Bowdoin late in the season there. So this is not a Tufts team that I'm going to be wanting to go up against right now. So we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, just finishing out this NESCAC list here, was happy that my man Brock made it, of course. Second team shout out Brock there. Little shocked that Clemente didn't make the list. I mean, I know we have a lot of good players we got to put on here, but Clemente has been a pretty big part of that offense. But other than that, I pretty much agree. I mean, Seamus has been the best goalie in D3 in my eyes, so having him as first team is obviously a great pick. And Hobbs has had a great year, so having him as second team, I also am quite aligned with.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other thing that I want to kind of mention here before we move on from just NESCAC talk and, you know, the voting and get into the matchups, is the Conn College defenseman, Jack Venturelli. He's definitely a guy deserving of a ton of credit. And if you're the top defender on a NESCAC team, you're going to be asked to guard a whole bunch of very, very talented attackmen, you know. So this is a guy that's seen a couple of All-Americans this year. Definitely is deserving of a ton of credit.
Yep, a ton. But you want to get into these matchups coming up this weekend?
Yeah, definitely. Let's dive in. We've already talked about them a bunch, so let's just kind of keep rolling with them. Tufts and Wesleyan coming in. You got this one. After that first game between them, you got to feel like Wesleyan wants another shot at him. You know, like they kind of were in a situation where they had him a little bit on the ropes. And then this was one of the games where Tufts kind of first rolled out and really stuck with the zone, on their part that they're running, you know, which was an interesting wrinkle that Wesleyan's offense was stalled by a zone rather than Wesleyan's defense stalling another team with their zone. But an interesting result there, and to be honest, like a really, really smart decision that they made at that halftime of that game after they were struggling a bit to guard them. And so that was a really good decision there. And then kind of sets the table for this weekend's rematch. Definitely going to be a really good one. Two teams that know each other very, very well. Strong rivalries. You know, we talked about a little bit of chippiness in that St. Lawrence Union game. I wouldn't be too surprised if we saw a little bit of chippiness go down in this one with seasons on the line. Wesleyan, I think if they win this one, they basically secure an at-large, despite if they end up dropping in the championship. Tufts, I feel like, is in a situation where, you know, like they're basically already in. But you know they want that hardware. You know they want that hardware.
Yeah. So Dan, how many teams do you think here from the NESCAC get in to the tournament?
So another situation on that other side, if Amherst wins this game, I think they're in, and it makes it a four-bid a league. Otherwise, I think you get Tufts, Bowdoin, and Wesleyan are probably just about in. assuming, like we said, that we don't have any results like what we're talking about in the NCAC, where if Kenyon takes out Denison, now Denison's taken a Pool C, and now whatever that third team in the NESCAC is, or the fourth team in the Liberty, or, you know, the third team in the ODAC, like, those guys start to sweat it out a bit.
Got it. Okay.
So with that one said, though, let's go ahead and jump to the other semi. Go to Bowdoin Amherst. How do you feel? I know they're your guys. You love you some Amherst. Are you nervous about this one? You nervous about Bowdoin?
Yeah, I mean, you put the all conference stuff aside for a second. I mean, Bowdoin, they've kind of been struggling just a little bit. I mean, I know they dropped their first one, their first loss. I think it was of the year to Tufts there. So that's kind of tough to bounce back from. And Amherst is a hot team that if they get on you and can jump on you, it's going to be a tough game. So we'll have to see who comes out and plays for Amherst there. If we got a good stout defense that can hold them, or if it's going to be the leaky defense that we've kind of seen throughout the year. So I think that's going to be the big question mark there, is Amherst D and goalie play. But if it's not up to par, I can see Bowdoin definitely running away with this and kind of getting back on top. And setting themselves up well to play most likely Tufts.
Yep, and Likens has really been pretty good for Amherst as of late, a couple 20 or 18, and Likens has been really good as of late with a couple high save number games, and so really giving them another piece of the puzzle on that defense that, you know, will just kind of help them out more down the line and bail them out in situations where they don't get exactly what they want on a recovery or a slide or whatever. To have that back end where you can know that he's going to bail you out a few times is really important.
Definitely. Yep.
All right. So with that said, the Bowdoin and Tufts, if they do happen to advance, you know this one's going to be amazing. Like, Bowdoin has to feel like they want another shot at him. I really do still feel, even after watching that first game, feel that Bowdoin has the talent to play with them. We said it on the day of, like, I don't know that it's necessarily a talent versus talent thing, but Tufts is an animal, you know, like, they're a tough program, no pun intended, but it's a tough program to go in and, just play confidently and play your style against without any experience doing it. And so Bowdoin is missing that experience, but now has it with that first game under their belt. And so maybe they're more prepared for the moment, you know, to be able to go in and keep level-headed, make sure that they're making all the right plays that they normally would, and just kind of sticking to their game plan and playing their game. I feel like if that happens, you know, they have absolutely a shot of winning it. They have the talent. As we've seen, according to the all-conference voting, you know, like, Donna Mullane is kind of the guy in the NESCAC right now, and really making lots of noise to make sure that he's putting Bowdoin in a good spot to turn the corner here and end up with a win. And then Tufts, like we said, like, Coach Gianolfo's never had an easier job of convincing his guys that they're overlooked or underdogs before. Like, and so now we're going to get another shot at that matchup, which would be just, you know, electric.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is going to be similar to what we were talking about too with the ODAC, where we have these two semifinal games on the Friday, and then the winners play on Saturday. So I think it's going to be similar to what we were talking about with Lynchburg and Washington and Lee, where it's going to be, you know, just your guys are going to come out and it's going to be talent versus talent. So that might favor Bowdoin just a little bit more with kind of how their roster set up this year. So we'll kind of have to see how that game plays out if it comes down to that.
Same concept, very different play out in those two games there. I don't exactly see the stat numbers looking the exact same in the Tufts Bowdoin game as the stat numbers will look in the Lynchburg W&L game. Probably a few more shots, a few more turnovers, a few more calls, turnovers.
Just a couple.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of a faster pace, my guess is. So I feel like we've spent plenty of time there on the NESCAC. Anything else you want to say about these guys before we move on and go ahead to our Spartans in the MAC?
Nope. Really excited to see how this NESCAC plays out here. And I think these are going to be teams, like you said, that we're going to be talking about here later in May. So looking forward to it.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's get to the MAC. I think based on the regional rankings, it's pretty clear that that both the Mac Commonwealth and the Mac Freedom are going to be one bid leagues. Whichever team wins it will get in. Unless there's an upset with Stevenson. If Stevenson happens to upset York in the championship game, I think York still has a strong bid, strong resume. Like we've said probably 10 times at this point, though, it'll be in the hands of the committee at that point. Like, you don't want to have to be sweating it out on 5-8, whether the committee is going to go and thus decide to take a highly ranked Region 5 team, or if they're going to take, you know, a middle of the pack Region 3 team that didn't win their AQ. You know, you don't want to be in that position where you're having to sweat it out. So, it'll be really interesting to see what happens there. I would be surprised if Stevens doesn't end up with the bid on their side of the MAC, but definitely something to keep an eye on. And then in the on York side of the MAC, you could end up with upsets in the semifinals. You know, like, these aren't games that you can totally look past. The York Widener game could be closer than we were expecting. It was a 4-4 game at halftime the first time they saw each other. It ended up obviously being, you know, drastically different than that. I think it gets to like 18-6 or something like that. But, you know, that first half has to be a little bit nerve-wracking. And then you also have Stevenson and Eastern, where that was a one-goal game when they played each other, you know. So, like we said, you know, one-goal, two-goal games, a couple different things throughout it spring the opposite ways, or 50-50 balls go the other way, and we're looking at totally different results. So, really interesting to see what happens there. Got to think that York and Stevens are the favorites here. But if there is any mix-up in there, could be, you know, pretty drastic for how we end up seeing the conference, the NCAA tournament play out.
Yep. Yeah, I think you hit it there pretty good. I mean, we're probably going to see the York-Stevenson matchup on the one side, and then the other side there, I think Stevens has it pretty locked in. But like you said, I mean, these are some games that, obviously we assume Stevenson and York are going to come out on top and be in the championship game, but they've had some tight games in the past, the one goal game from Eastern and the close game with Widener there. So I wouldn't overlook these teams at all for these semifinal matchups. But I think York Stevenson go into it. And I think, again, we probably see York pull it out on top and York get the bid there. But we'll definitely be watching to see how this one plays out.
Yeah. And, you know, like we say Stevens is the favorite, but they haven't exactly been world beaters this year. There's a chance that something that weird happens in that, and either DeSales or Arcadia ends up taking them out. And so we are recording this right now. Actually, by the time you're listening to this, you'll already know what happened in these games. And so we're recording right now on Thursday. You'll be listening to this on Friday. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how these games play out.
Definitely looking forward to it.
All right. So let's kind of start to wrap things up. As we move forward and head into this weekend, we have those games last night, that big Wednesday night slate has kind of played out. Caleb, why don't you take the mic for a minute and kind of lay out a couple thoughts here for us as we head into the weekend.
Yeah. So this weekend, obviously championship weekend, it's going to be an exciting one. My eyes are going to be obviously glued up to the NESCAC, I think, with that championship game and potentially a Tufts Bowdoin rematch. But I would be excited to watch any four of these teams be in that game. So that'll be one I definitely have my eyes glued to. Outside of that, the most likely York Stevenson matchup, I'm going to be watching that just for the hometown boys, but I think they pull away with it there. And then the Saturday ODAC matchup that we talked about is going to be another very interesting one that I think is going to come down to the wire here. So we just have some great lacrosse coming up this weekend that I'm super excited for and can't wait to watch here.
Big Dog, that was very well said. I very much so agree. I'm also looking forward to the weekend. Have a huge slate coming. It'll be interesting because it'll be less games than we've had in the last few, but just, you know, the importance of all of them is ramped way, way, way up. So really looking forward to those. Excited to see kind of how you know, all of these conferences play out, especially the ones that we chatted about today, but also those, you know, kind of second, maybe third tier conferences that, you know, have one team that'll get an AQ and the other not so slotted. But, you know, if there's upsets in there, you know, could be really interesting to watch.
I can't wait.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. We'll let the people go. Thank you to everybody for sticking with us, listening, giving us a piece of your day so that you can listen to a piece of our thoughts. We really appreciate it. We hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure you give us a like.
Rinse out. Drop that low.